Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham and we are definitely not being kicked in the head in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was a successful school reunion at Stamford Bridge on Saturday when a somewhat bad-tempered affair, which saw the Chelsea girls finish with 10 men. But could have they been down to 8? There was a lot to enjoy about winning at Chelsea, but we shouldn't paper over the cracks after what was a woeful first-half performance and the fact that we didn't have a shot on target until the 77th minute. Onwards and upwards, though, and this weekend gives us a chance to win 2 in a row as we travel to Wolves on Sunday. And in other news, we now know that our reward for our six love victories in the last two rounds of the League Cup is a trip to Arsenal on the 29th of October. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, as we moan about referees, with Andy Bass. Hello, Andy. You all right?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad.
Good. There is one thing we've got to say, though, Andy, isn't it?
What's that?
Happy birthday, Al.
Oh, yes. Happy birthday, Alan.
Thank you very much indeed.
Why is it, Al, that for some reason, on and around your birthday, we always seem to be away to Chelsea?
Because the way that the fixtures fall, that we're away at Chelsea. I mean, it's a bit like the beginning of the season. We're always at Man City within one of the first two or three games.
Well, they were here.
Well, what I mean is we always play them. And we always play Liverpool right at the end. Liverpool or Man United right at the very end of the season. You know, it's... actually, I specifically remember it. It was when I had my 50th birthday bash. I missed out on a away trip to Chelsea that day as well. I think we lost 2 or 3 nil. Those are the days when we didn't beat Chelsea, but nowadays, you know, we do it for fun. And I remember that day because I, for all those, and thank you to everyone who, well, not only wished me happy birthday this month, but last month sort of wished me well, having spent 18 days in hospital. But the first time I got what I got, which was, I'm happy to tell you, cellulitis, which is very nasty, infection, in my case, it was in my leg, was the very same day, was on my 50th birthday. Andy had just bought me, bless him, as a birthday present, a really nice slap-up Sunday roast at the Shakespeare's Head in Brighton. I went home, fell asleep, and woke up in screaming agony.
Yeah, I blame Andy for that. Really,
I'm more than happy to. Yeah, it was. I think it was the vicious bite you gave me on my leg. that's why he's now vegan. Anyway, thank you for the birthday wishes. Bless you. Just a nice night out with my wife in Worthing on Saturday. So, right, that's enough domestic stuff. Let's move on.
Well, Andy, it was a lovely trip to London at the weekend, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a terrific day out. A pleasant surprise, not what I was expecting.
A trip to Chelsea is—you don't actually consider it pleasant. I mean, the aftermath is, yeah, for sure. But you know, I'm with Elvis Costello on this one.
I actually quite like it as a trip because there's always like interesting places to go, sort of around that area. And we went via Imperial Wharf this particular occasion, which was...
What's there particularly?
Just the river. So a nice view.
Lots of helicopters making a
lot of
racket.
Lots of helicopters, a nice view, pretty decent pub. Obviously, it's quite a soulless area, but just nice and quiet and good, really nice place to sort of prepare
It's not actually that far from Fulham. And when you go to Fulham, you can't help thinking, you know, probably arguably Craven Cottage is set in one of the nicer, it's probably one of the nicer settings in all of football. And that's only coming more than about, what, a mile down the river?
Yeah, you can see it. But
I actually quite like Chelsea away. It's pretty easy to get to. There are, you know, there's loads of good pubs around all those sort of back streets and stuff. That's where there's the King's Road.
Well, last year, Andy, when I was coming to meet you, I was walking through the streets of Chelsea, and I thought I was on the set of Mary Poppins at one point. I was like, it was,
Was it oldie worldie villagey stuff?
it was, yeah, and you know, and all the blossom on the trees and things like that. It was delightful. But
It was
yeah, I
so.
mean, you know, as a place to go, I mean, obviously you've got the history of the King's Road and things like that as well. So it is, you know, it is a nice place to visit. Obviously.
So hang on, did you say Mary Poppins?
Mary Poppins,
Said
yeah.
Super Danny Goes Ballistic, Chelsea Are Atrocious.
You've been working on that.
I thought of it just 10 seconds ago. I gotta be working on it when I didn't know you were gonna reference Mary
That's
Poppins.
true. That is true. That is true. But yeah, no, it was yeah. So I mean, it's obviously when you win, it is a lot nicer. Andy, I mean, obviously winning. Obviously, you come away feeling they're much happier than losing, obviously. But I mean, we can't necessarily paper over the cracks because the first half was woeful.
I'm going to get some paper out and start taking a look at some of those cracks, AD, because I didn't think it was a woeful first half. It was not productive in the attacking sense. So yeah, obviously I'll agree with that. With no shots, no serious attempt on the Chelsea goal, just a couple of sort of like half opportunities where crosses could have been a bit better, but. Defensively, I thought we were really sound. We didn't really concede much to Chelsea at all. And obviously, complete contrast to last season where they had Cole Palmer just tearing us a new one. But basically, most of the threats they had, we nullified pretty easily. And I thought there were some good performances in that first half. I thought Belabor made his best start in a game for a long time, and whilst it wasn't still up to his usual high standard, it was definitely better than he's done so far. So maybe we've seen the first sort of steps on the road to recovery for Carlos, because
Yeah.
I thought he was terrific. He
Well,
made
one thing I did notice about Carlos in this game, from my position, was we had the smiling Carlos back. He hasn't necessarily he's always had better when he's playing with a smile on his face, and he hasn't necessarily been doing that of late, possibly because he's been frustrated with his own performance. But it's just lovely to see him smile again.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's actually a key barometer of like, is he on his way back? But I thought he was excellent. I thought the midfield in general was pretty good, very competitive, basically keeping Chelsea to shots from outside the area.
I think
So actually, defensively, it was pretty good.
it was generally better than I think the Spurs performance, in as much as I mean, I know that all the plaudits and all the camera angles were all sort of looking at Diego Gomez, because I mean it's Barnsley, you know. Once upon a time we'd lose to Barnsley on a nauseating basis. So he then goes and bangs in four goals, two of which are worldies. And so the attention's on him, but I think it was more down to his sort of bread and butter game. And I still think, while it was a decent performance, a reasonable performance from him, I still think that he's still got a bit of a weight. Now, it's obviously going to be very difficult, because if you want to set that bar as high as Belabor at his best, then, well, frankly, you're going to struggle with that. But you can still see that he's a work in progress. Personally, if he was fit, I'd still rather see Hinchwood starting. And for that matter, if we knew we could get 90 minutes out of him these days, week in, week out, I'd rather see Milner starting. But you can see that Gomez he's got the twinkle in his eye. You can see he's enjoying it. Except being kicked over a lot and sort of getting decisions against him when he's, missed a Chelsea player by quite a distance, and Mr. Hooper's given him a free kick against him. But like I say, I fully agree with the Belabor was better statement there, Andy. It was nothing like back to his best, because frankly, back to his best, he's probably one of the best midfielders or defensive midfielders in the country.
Well, world even.
Well, yeah, I mean, if
I
you're going to
would,
say this
I
country,
would
then.
go that far because I mean, that's what we were saying about Moises, and Moises has gone on to prove that he is one of the best midfielders in the world,
He's still
even
got the
in this
strop on,
game.
hasn't he, though?
Well, we're going to come to our friends who reunited from the Chelsea goals very shortly, but I mean, Gomez did start. Like you said, he came in a number 10 role. I'm not quite sure that's his best role. I mean, he came in for Gruda, and we also had Jorginho continuing more of a striker role.
It's
It
interesting you
just seemed to be
mention
a little bit disjointed.
his name there, Gruda. I mean, Gruda is decent when he starts, but actually he's absolutely lethal when he comes on with 20 minutes to go and the other team are flagging, or they're down to 10 men in this instance. In which case, I mean, I know that the cricketing phrase here would be flat track bully, but tough, you can only play what's in front of you, and he has it within him, Andy, to turn a game. And I think certainly when he came on, he was one of those who really did sort of show up and really, I mean, I think everyone's tails, every Albion tail was up after probably 55 minutes. But when Gruda came on, I thought he made a certain difference as well.
Absolutely. Well, again, Fabian's substitutions all worked, and not for the first time. They all made a contribution. I just one other player I'd like to talk about in terms of like the improved performance from a sluggish start to the season. I thought Jean-Paul Van Hekker, who I think has also been pretty much a shadow of his
Did you think he was sluggish? He's
performance
been
of.
sluggish this season. I mean,
But
we're decent, but
I think he has been,
I don't
yeah.
think he I again I don't think he's been up to the standard that he set last
Yeah,
season. I
but
thought
Andy, I mean, this is the whole thing, though, isn't
he was
it? Because
terrific.
it's the same thing with Belhaver, because he sets such high standards.
Yeah.
If you fall below the standard you set for yourself, then it's noticeable.
Van Hekker was absolutely brilliant in this match. Really, really
Yeah.
good. And he was just really fired. It just really, really fired up for it. I think. There's something in this. Yeah, for the players that have been around for a few seasons now, there is definitely something in this game, which is why it's actually a really entertaining game to go to, because it's got a bit of an edge and needle. Not that you'd notice from the, somnambulant home crowd at Stamford Bridge,
Did
but
you really just say
on
that word?
well, somnambulant, yeah.
There's a load of people getting their thesauruses out right now.
I'm just going to go for the alphabetic spaghetti.
But the players get it, and
Yeah.
it's really good. So I thought, I personally just think if we're starting Rutter up front, we know we're probably in for a little bit of a dry spell unless we get like a good set piece, because that doesn't really, that's not Jorginho's
Yeah.
best position at all. He can't really play that. He can't really play that role. And
No. No, because I mean, Georgie's just really, really good at linking play and playing those balls like through the middle for people to
it's
run
like what you
onto.
say. I think the common parlance these days is the number 10, the kind of the drifting person who's just in behind the leader.
Yeah.
It's clear that I think Danny Welbeck is at the moment our only line leader. I hate the phrase striker, but he's our only line leader at the moment. And I think he's not starting the games because probably at the moment, for a fellow who's pushing 35, he probably can't do 90 minutes week in, week out,
Yeah.
and not the intensity. I mean, I think that in every case, Hertzler would rather that Welbeck finishes a game than starts a game unless he
Really,
starts it,
I'm not so
scores.
sure about that. I mean, we were talking on the show last week, and it's like the king is dead, long live the king. I mean, it was very much we weren't saying that he was done, but basically he just was, again, which is what we were saying about Van Hekker and about Belhaber, he's not hitting his own high standards
It's
yet.
our spine. It's our spine that's actually been misfiring all season, and I think
Yeah.
actually a lot of it came together. Well, it came together in obviously in the City game after the substitutions, and it did this time. I mean, I think going back about 10 minutes from what we were talking about, I agree with Andy. Yeah, Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea did actually play pretty well. They were pinging it around pretty well, but the shots that they were having, yes, Verbruggen made some good saves. but they were from distance. The only time we were caught napping, really, unless I'm mistaken, the only time we got caught napping was for the goal.
Well, there was two free kicks they had early doors. we were going to talk about the Chelsea lineup, but the fact that there was no what's his face? I can't remember his bloody name now.
Cole Palmer.
Yeah, there's no Cole Palmer, but Hooper did start for them. it was
sorry
because I mean, you... those two early free kicks of the goal, which Bart was equal to them. They were both great saves, but neither of them were free kicks.
No.
So the first one, okay.
There was two players on one, wasn't it? I'm going to give them the one that was to the as the players are looking to the right of the goal. So as Bart's looking to the left or left of centre. There were two Albion players went in on them. And I think, although one of them won the ball, one of them, I think, just had a little kick at Chelsea, but inadvertently. But the point is that Hooper couldn't wait to get that whistle up his backside again.
Yeah, but then the second one, and this is one we've all had issue with. I know, and we were talking about this on Saturday, weren't we, Andy?
Yeah.
The one where somehow Hooper seemed to think it was a good idea to book Joel Veltman, because not only did he win the ball, we've had three Christmases in this assassination and re-election of seven popes by the time the Chelsea player got there. It was
seven popes. It was three when you told me before. This is going to be a Gary Nelson moment, isn't it?
Yeah, 1-2 off the local bus stop. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, round the Dunlop jumbo jet.
Yeah, flew it, landed it, then beat the three more defenders. Yeah, no, it was a long time. I mean, the point is, yes, he went in, but as the even the co-commentator pointed out, his foot wasn't up; it was actually on the ground. The studs weren't up, and it's a little bit like, you know, obviously because it didn't lead to anything else. When there was the Chelsea Fulham game three, four weeks ago, and the issue is that Fulham had a disallowed goal, which is why it was such a big contentious talking point. But at the end of the day, the Fulham player had to put his foot somewhere. And if anything, it was the Chelsea player, and I can't remember who it was, and I don't care. But they put his foot there, in the way. That's exactly what Enzo did. You know, Veltman, his foot was there first.
By a country mile.
It's just not a foul. It's not foul play.
It's coming. You can have a come
otherwise,
together.
You're just saying one play, you are not allowed to go. You have to concede the possession. He got there, you know. It was a really, it was an excellent challenge on the ball.
He wasn't even in the picture when he got the ball.
It was a brilliant challenge on the ball. And of course, like, you know, the booking came very early on. And obviously with the way that the refereeing went, you know, Hertzler had to bring Veltman off. Veltman was having a pretty good game, I thought. Another player had a good game. But he had to be subbed off just after,
he was subbed off after the red card, wasn't
he? After the red card, because, you know, Hertzler quite correctly thought, well, he'll find an excuse to even this up.
God, yeah. I mean,
he had to make that sub.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of, but I think I can't help feeling, though, that there's, you can't know because you're not in the players' minds, but when you're watching it, you're kind of thinking, after probably 20 minutes or so, the Brighton players are thinking, we have to sort of, can't go in full steam into a challenge here, because even if we go half cock into one, the referee's going to blow for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's almost a sort of reluctance almost to go into a challenge, which means Chelsea are able to keep the ball. I don't know if there's a mindset that thinks that, thinking, if I go into it, that player's going to throw himself in the air, do a triple salco, assassinate seven popes or whatever 80s phrase was, and then fall to the ground. And Hooper will give it. Yeah. You know,
Hooper won't give it until he sees the puff of white smoke, frankly. Well, but
yeah, just coming out of Pedro's arse. Yeah, and it's, and I mean, every single thing. I mean, like, there was probably one of the biggest cheers in the first half was when we actually got a free kick.
Yeah,
and even then, it was more of an assault.
Well, yeah, because quite frankly, we didn't look like we were going to score a goal, so that we thought this was going to take any celebration that we can. But
Chelsea did score a goal, and yeah. Al, you've got an issue with this.
I've freeze framed it And let's put it this way, one hopes that VAR, because VAR look at all these things all the time because they are mood hoovers and do like to, well, unless it's Chelsea, they do, unless they want to stop. And because it was actually VAR that actually intervened on that Chelsea Fulham incident, wasn't it? Rather than the
Yes.
referee giving it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Re-reffing the game, yes.
now as the cross comes in, now, yes, I know it's deflected, but that's not the issue. The deflection isn't, is by the by. I think that it could or should have been looked at a bit more closely. I think that Enzo was maybe half a knob offside.
I mean, the ball did take a hefty deflection
But the
off.
deflection's not the point. I mean, it's not as though the player
I
is onside when there's a deflection. It's from the original kick. So, in other words,
can't.
it's still part of the same phase of play.
I mean, you know me, Al, I've got blue and white striped specs on, and I will claim offside even if it's not. But
Oh yes, I've noticed.
on that, I can't. I haven't got any issues with it, really, to be honest. I mean, it was a great ball from Moises to James, and then Carew tried to block the cross, and it looped off him, and that took the deflection, took the cross away from our other defenders, and Enzo was there to head in. So, I haven't got too many issues with it. It was like good cross, good header.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean. Yeah, go on,
Which
Andy,
we're going to
sorry.
be talking about again very shortly. Yeah. But
But
I mean,
go
in fairness, I thought the ball from Moises was just absolute quality. I've watched it a few times now, and I was thinking,
yes, and
you know, because
we saw.
at the time I just thought, oh, Carew's a little, just got caught out in the wrong bit of space. But really, it's just a really good pass. And
Well, we've seen him do
and
that for
the
us
and the
loads of
and the
times.
Yeah, the deflection just took it straight to Enzo. It was just, yeah, I don't have a I mean, problem with it. It was a good goal for Chelsea. yeah. Now there was a lot of key features in this game to enjoy. One of which was the personal duels, particularly that, Andy, of Moises, not Moises Caicedo, but João Pedro against Jean-Paul Van Hekker. Yeah, and it was quite interesting that JP put one on JP almost immediately, I think in the first or second minute.
Or gave him a reducer.
Well, not a reducer, but a nudge in the back, which sent Pedro I flying was to the watching ground,
the.
and actually one of the few deserved free kicks that Chelsea, because that was a
I
foul.
was
That was a
watching
foul,
this.
JP. So, but yeah, Van Heck was just up for it. He was on it. Clearly, it's very interesting in the, sort of going to digress a little bit.
Go for it.
But on the Brighton Unlocked video, which the club re released today, there's some really nice sort of pre-game footage of Pedro chatting with Lewis Dunk, saying hello to quite a few, to some of the other the players,
Jorginho.
Jorginho and Gomez, and he also went out and shook the hands of Hertzler and the coaching staff, and the whole thing seemed entirely convivial. I thought, well, that was nice to see. It was really good. There didn't seem to be any issues there whatsoever.
And let's
But that
face it.
didn't stop Van Heck from basically saying, "Listen, mate, you're in for an afternoon here." And
Yeah,
like
because
we didn't see Pedro at all
no,
because
he
he
was
was
very
very
quiet.
quiet.
That was out of loyalty to us. He didn't have a shot on target. Well, Adrian Pedro did his job.
But I mean, I was watching it develop all afternoon because there's a lot of stuff going on off the ball as well. They're constantly having a little bite, and obviously, it's a well known fact that those two had a fight on the training ground. Which was one of the reasons why Pedro's no longer here.
That and Chelsea coughed up 60 million. I think that was probably the main thing.
I mean, I still think that's undercooked for him. But
Let's put it this way: if Chelsea were going to cough up 60 million, would Pedro have been here, whether he was best friends with Jean-Paul or not?
well,
There you go, you see.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure Tony would have accepted 60 million if there wasn't
Well,
another issue.
I suppose there is that, but.
I mean, my man of the first half, Andy, was Yankuba Minte. He just put, I mean, Philip, who's my man of the match, full stop, actually. I mean, he put in an absolutely massive shift. But there was one incident in the first half, and this is just utterly, utterly ridiculous, right? So
He dances into the box. He can't get a shot away, so he lays it off to Ayari, who can't shoot because there's a purple people eater in front of him. It's
I've got to
clear
say that's
obstruction.
is one of those things, though. I mean, if the referee had touched the ball, then yes, he can restart the game. But there's nothing in the rules about him getting in the way of a person. So, and let's face it, the referee is genuinely a legitimate part of the game, is part of the pitch. Yes, he's trying to get out of the way as much
I
as
think he actually
possible, but
did. Didn't he actually block? No, because he was,
they
he
blocked
blocked
Ayari.
Ayari.
He's got
He
he
did
blocked
block it.
Ayari.
Yeah, he blocked Ayari off. And like Ayari was lining up to shoot. It was a good,
Yeah. Well,
like,
he would have
we're, I mean,
definitely scored 100%.
absolutely. He should have sent himself off for denying a goal scoring opportunity.
I don't think he knows what one is. That's what we're going to
We'll
come
come to that in a minute.
to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's. No, I mean, but it's. I think it's just indicative of someone who really wasn't at the. Well, he was. I would say wasn't at the races. He was probably at the races. He just wasn't at the football. Listen, if Shearer can point out that. Alan Shearer can point out that the referee had a bad game. I mean, he only cited two of them. I think probably with the exception of the Albion's extended highlights, I haven't seen any real reference to the booking that Veltman got from, certainly from not any neutral media.
Oh, the Sky Highlights guy was the co-com on the Sky package.
Right.
Was excellent, was really good actually. I don't know who it was, but he was watching the same game as me, so
Well,
fair play to him.
he couldn't believe the Veltman booking. He thought it was
No,
what was the
he couldn't.
co-commentator? He thought it was
He's
ridiculous.
he called it very harsh, and he said that was a really good tackle, so I can't see anything there.
Yeah,
um
no,
so
it's
he was he was yeah so fair play to that guy.
okay.
No, absolutely.
Well, we'll come on to the second half shortly. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, and we're all sending flowers to Danny Welbeck, aren't we, Al?
Yeah, which ones do you suggest?
Yellow ones.
Yellow ones, okay. Because he is, yeah, he that guy does actually excel in yellow, doesn't he? Yes, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove is where you want to go for Flowers Unlimited. They sell unlimited flowers, any occasion, happy or sad, or anywhere in between. Looking at you, Chelsea. So yes, do head down there. If you tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, they'll give you a 20% discount, which is rather marvelous. Yes, so it's not just flowers. You can get chocolate and champagne and other presents for people you love and people you hate and what have you. If anyone can actually think of, I don't know if there's a play on words or an appropriate flower that you'd actually get for Danny Welbeck, let us know and let's see if we can sort something out. But anyway, in the meantime,
I wouldn't say it would be a late bloomer because I mean
He's been around for a while.
he's been around, yeah.
Well, whatever it is,
A
it'll be a
perennial. How
perennial.
about a
You certainly want a
perennial?
perennial, yeah. That flowers in winter. So yeah, so head to 175 to 177 Portland Road to go and see Flowers Unlimited. Tell the staff we sent you for your 20% discount. And thank you very much indeed to Dave Costa for sponsoring the show.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton Hove and Dishwich Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Now, Andy, we were talking on the train going up on Saturday that that we think we look better in yellow.
Yes.
I
Yes,
thought
we.
that the thing from about 3 or 4 years ago was that the yellow and blue kit was unlucky.
That one was.
What's changed?
It's a different color yellow. No, I mean, basically, I
Oh.
mean, the players said last year, actually, I mean, it's a weird anomaly kind of thing with the way, and I'm not quite sure how it works with the contract with Nike and things like that. But last season, we would have been due to wear the green and black kit at least once. But the players really, really liked this yellow kit, and they felt like it was lucky. And the results we had last year when we were wearing it were superb on the road. So I wasn't surprised to see it back out again at the weekend. I mean, because we could have worn
I think you'd have been
the
asking for
magenta
trouble
one.
with the violet one. I think that there
Yeah.
might
Well,
have
no,
been.
we wore that at Everton, so it's the, which is the same colour blue.
Yeah, but they wore white shorts, and I think that was probably the difference. That's my reckoning anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, I would not surprise me in the slightest if the players have actually said that they'd prefer to wear the yellow, like, because they still feel it was lucky from last season, and we've worn it once this season and won once this
Are
season. So
footballers still that superstitious, do you reckon, Andy? Are they really still that superstitious? Oh,
yes.
I was just thinking it was all mumbo jumbo, but then actually I
No,
have my
no,
superstitions about
we're all
football.
superstitious. We're all
What
superstitious.
are yours then?
Yeah.
Oh, you've got to go to the same pub until it doesn't work
Yeah.
3 games later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Left sock on first, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These things all count now.
If
They
you
all
wear a
count.
shirt, if you're wearing a particular shirt and you're in that shirt, you wear that shirt again till you lose.
I mean, obviously, if we don't win, it'll be because somebody else had missed out on one of their superstitions and
Yeah.
not on us sticking to ours. Because, like, we're pretty steadfast.
Yeah, you
I
cannot
would
blame
actually
us.
point. I would actually point out that you two are absolutely mental. But then I have mine that I never wear any Albion shirt. The only colours I wear is when it's cold. I'll wear a scarf and a hat, an Albion scarf and hat. But
But
apart
you
from
used
that.
to, though. You used to. You always used to wear the yellow decal shirt.
Me,
Well, the no, it wasn't a decal. The yellow Buckter shirt.
yeah. I had
Tough
an
one.
old, I had one, an old one of them, but it doesn't fit me anymore. So,
Okay. Anyway, we digress from talking about referees, and oh God. Let's just give credit first to Kurum Mitoma. What brilliant pressing to put pressure on the Chelsea defender, and he played it into Diego Gomez, who was clean through on goal,
Just and
and
just
then an
onside.
invisible force came from nowhere and took him out, at least as far as Simon Hooper was concerned. Go on, Andy, you
Unbelievable.
go first.
Unbelievable decision from the referee. What can you say? It's just like blatant, absolute blatant. And for once, VAR actually got something right at Chelsea. They didn't continue that record further into the game, but yeah, great play by Carew, who I thought had a disappointing, who I thought had a disappointing game. Actually, I think he's still in a bit of a slump, but in that instance, he did show some real energy. Harried the Chelsea player, who was just out on his own. He was just left on an island there, and
I thought he was
Carew,
dithering though. I mean, he was asleep a little bit.
And Carew just took advantage superbly, and the actual pass into Gomez was beautifully struck, and Diego is just on it like a flash. He's just an absolute tiger in that situation, and the guy just like got he got first of all got a little bit of a nudge, and then the old
Was a pincer
peg
move, wasn't it?
leg came in and took him down.
So
So.
one wonders what it was then that Hooper did or didn't see. I mean, again, we're trying to sort of work our way into someone's mind here, and it's that kind of process that, and this is where VAR comes in. Now, is it the case that he's going to err on the side of caution? Because don't forget, Chalobah is in between him and Gomez. So has Gomez taken a dive? So if he gives a free kick and a red card. Now, VAR can intervene on the red card, but I'm not sure if they can then intervene on the free kick. So what he does is he does nothing and lets VAR effectively make that decision for him. It's a bit like the Holgate thing on Carew a couple of years ago. I've given him a yellow, but I can always change it. But then likewise, VAR can always say, look, yeah, it's a red, but I don't think it should be. So I'm just wondering about the whole mindset, and it's the collective mindset of the referees and the VAR people. In Stockley Park, what? How do they arrive at a decision? Is their default decision no, or is their default decision yes because it's Chelsea? Yeah, VAR intervened, and we're going to get onto the fact that then VAR completely and utterly destroyed his reputation
Yeah.
in the space of 20 minutes. But yeah, it was. But the point is that one, Hooper didn't want to give it. And secondly, when he was sent to the screen, you could see it. He had to look about half a dozen times. That little loop that they have, right, is that. This going to look again. I mean, it was easily six or eight times. You really got the feeling Hooper didn't want to give it.
Yeah.
No.
You actually did get that feeling.
It was just utterly ridiculous. I mean, the view from the press box was basically everyone was incredulous. Well, how was he not given that? And like, no one could quite understand it. And the idea with VAR
is that before VAR intervened.
This is before VAR, because he played on. Okay. He played on.
Oh yeah. No, I know that. But when you're saying about the incredulity,
Chelsea could quite easily have got up the other end and scored, and he probably would have given the goal. But it's like, it's the role of VAR is not to referee the game. The role is to like correct any errors,
which in this instance they played their role 100%
right.
But
the referee has got to he can't wait for VAR to intervene and tell him to play on. He's got to make the decision as he sees fit, as if there was no VAR, because if there was no VAR, then he would have played on.
No, I get that. No, I totally get that, and that's the mindset. I mean, he saw Gomez go down, but is it a case of, well, I felt Chalabar just behind me, and he, I suppose this is where the linesman then comes in, because the linesman would have had an even clearer view.
Yeah.
I suppose if I'm going to be charitable to Hooper, because I'm certainly going to be charitable him later. It just might be the angle from which he viewed it. He might just have thought like Gomez tripped over his own foot or something from the angle that he was looking at.
Well, that's what I mean. Chalabar was in between him.
Yeah.
And
so,
Gomez, yeah.
You know, if I'm going to cut him some slack, I will do that. But you're quite correct. He did not need to see that replay about eight times. It was pretty evident from the two angles that they had that it was a denial of a goal scoring opportunity.
Can I just point out about Chalabar what a great agent he is for us as well? So let's go back a couple of years. He scored an own goal when we beat.
Didn't
them
he get two?
He no, it was Loftus Cheek that Ruben Loftus Cheek
that's
scored
it, yeah.
One. Yeah,
oh, that was a good,
he
that
was
the
one game. Who turned in. I think it was Matoma's cross.
Yeah,
could be wrong. It was either Matoma or Estupiñán. I can't remember. But also he was the defender who didn't get tight enough to Carew last season when he scored his worldie.
Yes.
I mean, the Chelsea fans were berating him. I'm thinking, well, you're being harsh, and let's face it, the whole world wants to see a worldie scored against Chelsea, so just let him do it.
Yes.
So I'm that's actually a hat-trick now for Chalabar.
Well, I'm just checking something, some stats, so just talk amongst yourselves.
Okay, so... Yeah, I mean, then the resultant free kick, Andy, was probably the less... Should we talk about that, or is there just really not worth... Did you catch the ball?
Yes, I nearly knocked my glasses off. Yeah, it wasn't the best. I think he needs to... His shooting boots come from open play rather than set play,
and
Diego.
I think he's left them in South Yorkshire.
Oh, but yeah, you can't blame him for having a go. But obviously, once the red card was made, that's when we had the first change, which was Wiefer coming on for Veltman. And I have to say, I thought Wiefer was superb.
Generally, yes. But I mean, after 10 minutes, he got booked as well, which kind of undid the whole point.
Yeah, but he was absolutely solid. And like, you know, actually, I thought one of his better right-back performances.
Even then, he stepped into midfield later on, so...
Yeah,
well, this is an interesting point that I actually want to come to, if that's all right now, because I mean, it is. We will still talk about the kick in the head thing in a minute, but I get the feeling that, I mean, Chelsea went down to 10 players and then choked. I mean, one thing that you learn, certainly it was, I remember watching Brighton so many times, especially under Gus. Christ, how many times did we get players sent off? And when you play with 10 players, yes, you have to alter your things a little bit, and you usually sacrifice one of the front players. But you don't then necessarily defend on your own 18-yard line. And Chelsea basically allowed us to get all the way to the halfway line and then effectively set up a play. I'm obviously, well, their idea is then they'll hit us on the counter-attack. I get that. But they really dropped deep, not to the point of low block / park the bus, but enough that I'm thinking, well, just play your normal game, Chelsea, and I think we're going to struggle. But they didn't. They let us back in. That's not to say that it was all down to Chelsea. Of course, you know, we upped our tempo, but I think one of those things that did help is the point I'm eventually getting around to make is shifting Weaver into midfield. Now, if you're saying, I think it's probably in that case that it was then a back three of De Kuyper, Dunk and Van Hecker. Is that pretty much how you saw it, or?
Well, De Kuyper didn't come on till
well, he came on eventually, and when
much
he's...
later.
Yeah, but De Kuyper came in and went to right back, and
yeah,
then
he came on in the
then
eighth
Weaver
minute.
stepped into the midfield.
Hang on, is De Kuyper number 29?
Yes,
right.
He came on
in the 85th minute.
Yeah, he definitely started at left back then. So
yeah. Because Ferdy stepped up as well. It was musical chairs at the back there. But it was the bad news is, Al, into your theory. I thought this was the case. Trevor Chalobert is only an agent when he's playing for Chelsea, because when he was playing for Crystal Palace last year, he did in fact score against us.
Well, that's
in
not
the
very
free
good,
when
is
they
it?
won 3-1.
Oh, thanks for the reminder of that,
Yeah,
oh, well done,
AD.
AD. Yeah,
I
I
know.
was
Yeah,
enjoying myself, you know.
I know, it feels like being kicked in the head, doesn't it?
Go on, and let's go on to that, because, well, as much as you're congratulating Darren England on VAR, one, I mean, it's probably even more
don't we
clear
have the
than
goal
the...
first?
Sorry?
Wasn't the goal first?
Yes. Yes,
Oh,
it
go on
was.
then. All right, go on then. Let's do
Yes.
that.
Well, yes, the goal. So basically, this was all about Minte's delicious cross for Danny Welbeck to power ahead of home and create a scene of massive limbs behind the goal.
Yeah, and it's about time that Andy, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was a great attacking run by Welbeck. Pure striker. You know, that's just top level experienced striker finding the space, completely bamboozling the defence. He didn't pick him up at all. Minta doing what all good wide players do, just ping that ball in early and fast. Don't give him a chance to defend it. Yeah, Welbeck saw that a mile off, and he was just licking his lips. He came in, and that ball just flew in. You just love it. Just love it when you just see that pace, the pace at which that happened. It was just the proper football.
Because Danny had another chance just before that, which sailed just wide. But I mean, watching his movement when he came on, he seemed a lot sharper than he has been of recent weeks, and it was just that the time of the running for that header, oh, just delicious.
What I would say actually is that, and it's not uncommon amongst sort of forward players. Some players can do it, some can't. I think that at times it's more Welbeck's link-up play has been a little bit sort of, but once he's facing goal, and once he's, you know, he's a few yards out, he's either creating chaos or he's scoring goals. And that's what we know can do. But when you see him trying to work effectively the same role that Rutter does when he's not on the pitch. And to be honest, the similar, not dissimilar one that Pedro did. So far, he hasn't been as good as he can be. You know, his layoff has gone a bit astray. He hasn't quite sort of got there but let's say it was just delicious to see that. I mean, you're right. The cross from Minte was so hard, so flat, so pinpoint.
Yeah,
that,
and the key I mean, thing here is Al as yeah. well, which we haven't mentioned, is the fact that unusually we'd taken Kurt Mitoma off, which meant that Minte had switched over to the left wing, which is where he was when he put that cross in, and it's like it was just wonderful.
Now, I know a lot of people do have an issue about, so what do they call it, inverse wingers or something like that. So a left-footed one on the right-hand side and vice versa. I don't have a problem with that because basically, in theory, the fullbacks that you've got behind you are the ones who are not the inverse ones. They're usually left-footed on the left side and right-footed on the right side. So you've got the choice of the in-swinging cross or the out-swinging cross. It just so happened to be in this case that Gruder, If Gruder ended up on the... Actually, that's a point. Gruder's left-footed, and yet he was the one who was effectively the senior player by being allowed to play on the right. So that was a kind of an interesting thing to see. But having said that, yeah, it's probably one of the first times I've seen Minte on the left hand side. And to be fair, I think he was struggling when James was there, but Gusto there, I think he had him on toast.
Oh, Gusto was having an absolute mare.
Yeah. I mean, in the first half, I thought that he had Cucurella on toast, especially as Cucurella had been booked. But then there was so little end product, part of which was down to the rest of the forwards and the referee getting in the way. But yeah, that cross was just so sexy.
Yeah, I mean, it was very difficult for Danny to miss, to be honest. But it was that good a cross, and he's like, you know, that's bread and butter for Danny, and that's just yeah, great.
I've seen him miss absolutely those. Wonderful. I've seen him miss them.
Oh, we've seen him miss him, but you know, that's the thing with Danny. He's never been particularly prolific, isn't it? Don't forget, last season was the first time in his career that he netted double figures.
Well, wouldn't it be nice for him to want? By the time he's finished with the season, that he's hit 50 for us. So.
Well, how many is he? We asked you.
Well,
this
I think
question,
we worked this. It's 35. So 35. I think he's two behind Michael Robinson. I'm not. You forget the whole Premier League bit. I'm talking about the top division
flight.
Entirely. Yeah.
First division.
Yes. Of which Michael Robinson's still on 37. Danny Welbeck, of course, is going to overtake it and be that person. And then, you know, hopefully, I mean, I don't know. Does he care about those kind of records? I always just remember what Jason McAteer said. I don't care about records. Kylie Minogue makes records. Yeah.
But it's as a club, it's a massive milestone, I think, and
yeah,
it's
one
that's what this one that does need to be celebrated when it, if and when it does happen. It's
talking of milestones. It is also the case, and I've mentioned it a few times, but now he's done it. Lewis Dunk is out on his own in second place for all-time appearances for the Albion, just overtaken Norman Gall, so he's now on 492. Yeah,
so he'll get to 500 by the end of the season. He's got a long way to go to catch.
He's got at least. Probably two seasons to go to catch Tug Wilson. So,
yeah.
But, talking of tugging, should we talk about kicking in the head now?
Yeah, now we can get to that.
Now we can get there. Hooper, you pranner.
Yes, but Al, that's the problem here. We're not talking about being kicked in the head. Again, it was that same invisible force that struck him in the head, the same one that took out Gomez earlier on. Because,
well, do you want to go
again,
first?
Clearly, the ref can't see it.
Do you want to go first, Andy? Because my rant is going to be outrageous.
It's a simply extraordinary decision. And, you know, the short version, the TLDR is they got it wrong.
That's very charitable, Andy.
It was definitely a penalty. It was dangerous play. Kicked him in the head. That's a penalty kick. If it was a red card, I'm not sure whether it would be deemed violent conduct, but it's definitely a penalty. And the video, surprisingly, is very clear on this matter.
Yes.
But apparently, the video was not clear on this matter, and they were unsure as to whether
the referees
had been made. I'm off now.
This is what
enrages me about this. So the thinking from Stockley Park was we weren't sure whether there was contact, completely ignoring the fact that this guy's foot was several feet off the ground. Minter wasn't even stooping at the time.
Let him rant. Go on. Yeah.
At the time of contact, like, Minter was still pretty much upright. The guy's foot was really, really high. You just can't do that. That's regardless of whether there's contact or anything. That is reckless.
Anywhere else on the pitch, etc., etc.
Yeah, exactly, and that you know, so that would be a foul, and that in because it's in the box, it would be a penalty kick. You can then argue about the sanction, whether it be a yellow card or a red card. Probably a yellow card.
I'd probably say yellow.
I think it's probably a yellow.
Attempting to go for the ball.
Yeah, I think one of the commentators said I don't think he saw Minter. He was just swinging to kick the ball. Which I suspect is probably true, but it's not a mitigation. It's still a foul.
Yeah.
And how you can sit at a TV monitor with, you know, a couple of VAR officials and they say, you know what? I'm really not sure about this one. Are you kidding me?
I'm just
Seriously, are you kidding
well,
me?
I've got the statement here. It said the referee's call of no penalty was checked and confirmed by VAR, with it deemed there was no conclusive evidence that Gusto made any contact with Minte.
Surely that's irrelevant.
It is, it's utterly irrelevant. Whether
Do you remember that incident last season? I think it was Chelsea against West Ham, and I think there was a Chelsea defender was pulling a West Ham player's arm in the box, and the West Ham player went down, and referee didn't give a penalty, or maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but VAR, they either intervened and said, we agree no penalty, or we're going to turn this around, no penalty, because the pulling of the arm, I'm paraphrasing here, wasn't long and consistent enough. And you think, where in the IFAB rules does it say that? Similarly, with this particular one, he didn't connect. Sorry, as you pointed out, whether Gusto's foot was chest high, whether it was chin high, I mean, yes, it's not even a mitigation that Minte ducks his head down by about 4 inches in order to get the ball. That was a wild swinging foot or wild sort of foot. I'm convinced he, you know, you can see by the automatic reaction, you know, the way that Minte threw his head back, he connected. No, it wasn't a massive connection. It's not as though he, when you say kick in the head, it's not as though his head, you know, ended up in the back of the net. But it's enough that how violent does it have to be? I mean, if that was anyone else, anywhere else on the pitch, if we did that to them, it's, I mean, this is the thing that I was thinking at the time when I was watching it. I thought, well, if we don't get a result from this, there will be, in London parlance, there will be murders. Not literal murders for any of our lawyers listening in, but it's they're just creating their own rules. Yeah. There's not enough evidence to say he was kicked in the head. Sorry, the mere fact that he might have missed by half an inch is not mitigating circumstances.
No, well, that's, the other point is he didn't miss. Yeah. It was clear contact.
Yeah, and my favourite referee, Mr. Keith Hackett, was very scathing.
On which platform are we talking about here?
He was
all of them.
talking about the Minte kick in the head.
Yeah,
and I what media role he's got now, but he does do like a little sort of ref watchy type thing for either a paper or something, and he just said, it's ridiculous that they didn't give a penalty kick for that. It's just like they should be fired. Well, more or less that they should be fired for not giving it.
But the violence didn't stop there, though, did it, Andy? Because immediately after this, there was a bit of a melee, and which resulted in coming together of Jean-Paul Van Hecke and Moises Caicedo, with JP being poleaxed.
Well, the thing is, even that was missed. I think it was I can remember the Chelsea defender's name, trying to drag him up by his shirt. What's all that about?
I think that was Badji Shai, wasn't it? But yeah, again, like a melee. Caicedo goes for JP. He goes down. It looked like he tried to headbutt him from where we were, or lump him or something. It was all very inconclusive.
I'm not quite sure what it was. I would say there was a violent movement towards him.
Yeah, and what was extraordinary out of this, because this all was a result of our player getting kicked in the head. So obviously we're slightly protective of our teammates. And at the end of it, Caicedo should have been sent off for his part in that. And then JP and Lewis both get booked. Just absolutely.
Sure. Did he?
And Lewis was getting attacked by Badi Shai, and like, fair play to Robert Sanchez, who actually
played
the peacemaker by
he was going to lamp him.
Not only extricating Badi Shai from the melee, but then, you know, taking him to task for being a part of it in the first place. So fair play.
It'd be fair to say that there. Robert Sanchez held on to that player much better than he did the ball at Crystal Palace when he let in that bloody.
This all came about because like Hooper just had lost control of the game by now.
Yeah.
It's like major. I mean, all the micro errors plus the two headline stinkers that he had. And then he allowed this situation to develop. Absolutely no control over the players. We're probably going to get fined
We
now.
are.
And it's all his fault for not officiating the game properly in the first place. He's an idiot.
Yeah, well, we've got history with them anyway. But let's just move on to the good news in this game is that we didn't rest on our laurels and we took advantage of our man advantage, and we made it 2-1. And again, I mean, this was a game of delicious crosses, actually. Ayari's cross to the back stick is headed back across goal by Vifa, and there is the Belgian to net his first Albion goal, and that's Maxim de Kuyper, whose goal was very similar, Al, to the one he scored for Belgium.
Yes, it was. Yeah, sort of a header that's about sort of four yards out. The other thing I'd say about it is and it's, I don't think it's an argument that holds water anymore. Oh yeah, we beat Chelsea, but they only had 10 men. One, you if you've that's by it's still a legitimate part of the game. Yeah, I know you'd rather it comes across better when you won 11 v 11, but them going down to 10 men is no
We
excuse.
did win
Probably,
11 v 11.
sorry.
We did win 11 v 11.
Oh, I think it was probably about 14 v 11. Yeah, but it doesn't excuse their absolutely dreadful defending for our second and third goals. Actually, probably for our first goal as well. I mean, because again, Welbeck was unmarked. I'm only guessing here that Chalabar is probably their last decent central defender, because other than that, their central defence was an absolute mess. I think there was probably another person queuing up if de Kuyper hadn't got it.
Well, yeah, actually, because I've got, I'm looking at my notes I was making at the time on Saturday, and the way that Simas like reeled away celebrating, I was convinced it was him that was actually scored, and that's why I've got Simas scores on my
No.
notes. But it was definitely de Kuyper. But I mean, it was a wonderful celebration by our lovely Greek friend.
But if we're going to talk about celebrations, I think we must go to the third goal straight away, because yeah, all right, de Kuyper scored what was ultimately the winner, but it's well, wait, one, we won the ball. I mean, by this time you can see that the Chelsea heads are dropped, they're gone. But it's Welbeck. He's fed by Gruda.
Gruda.
He waits for the Chelsea players to put themselves on their backsides, and then just sticks it in the top corner. It's the absolute glee. It's the absolute heartfelt pleasure that you could see. I mean, already he got his booking. It's that absolute wonderful pleasure that he got from scoring. It's almost like this is a fella who's actually just gained his mojo back in public, in front of everyone, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a supreme performance from Welbeck, and that's been the Danny that we've been missing, quite sadly, this season, whilst we're waiting for Simas to get up to speed. It's been a lot of responsibility put on Welbeck's shoulders, and we ask a lot of him, and he's not had the greatest start, and this was just like he had got his. When did he come on? Like 67 minutes. So he ended up playing like a good half an hour, and and he just looked great. It was just brilliant.
Absolutely. And justice was served.
And we got it was a good second half performance. And as you correct, Al, playing 10 men doesn't always quite often means you don't
We're
win,
normally terrible against them.
but we show good character, and good organisation and tenacity in that second half to make sure we did make that count, and we wanted to win that. Those players wanted to win. I love to see
Oh
that.
God, yeah.
And obviously the best thing about Danny's goal celebration was the rub of the head afterwards.
Well, given Hooper's behaviour, I'm amazed he didn't give him three red cards for that.
Well, yeah, I mean it's a conversation for another day, I think. But I mean, particularly given Ekitike's second yellow, that was just really, really stupid. But my dream team's like my fantasy team has just died because of that.
Silly boy.
Angry. Anyway, that is all we have time for this week. So thank you so much to Andy Bass. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Eddie Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. Bye.
It's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Because I was afraid to speak when I was just a lad, my father gave me nails and tweak, told me I was bad. But then one day I learned a word to say, we ain't the nose.
He traveled all around the world, and everywhere he went, he'd use his word and all would say, there goes a clever gent.
When Dukes and Martha Rogers pass a time of day with me, I say me special word and leave me off me out to tea.
Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Docious alley expiastic fragicalibupus, but that's going a bit too far, don't you think? So when the cat has got your tongue, there's no need for dismay. Just summon up this word and then you've got a lot to say. But better use it carefully or it could change your life.
For example?
Yes?
One night I said it to me girl, and now me girl's me wife. Oh, and a lovely thing she is too.
She's
supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. 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 Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.